This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, top of the Tuesday to you. Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. So the question that I am, you know, I'm looking at right now, Purdue Pharma is talking about declaring bankruptcy. Why? Because, you know, they don't want to be responsible for killing millions or hundreds of thousands of Americans and the costs associated with that after their executives took literally billions of dollars out of the company. I mean, this is just absolutely nuts. After this is this piece from Common Dreams, after spending hundreds of millions of dollars convincing the American public that their painkillers are safe for chronic pain, the drug maker Purdue Pharma is going to file for bankruptcy. One of the people who is suing, Martha Healey of Massachusetts, said Purdue Pharma and its executive built a multi-billion-dollar business based on deception and addiction. The more drugs they sold, the more money they made, and the more people in Massachusetts suffered and died. Same thing happening with PG&E, excuse me, which apparently was responsible for the Paradise Fire that killed, what, 78 people, as I recall? And they're looking at bankruptcy as a way for their executives and their company to avoid responsibility. So is it time to end corporate bankruptcies that are the result of crimes like Purdue addicting America and PGE neglecting the maintenance of their high-tension lines for years and years in order to jack profits and pay their, you know, dividends to their stockholders and you know, huge salaries to their senior executives? And instead of allowing them to simply declare bankruptcy and walk away, and we saw the same thing with the banksters in 2008, is it time to start prosecuting these corporate criminals who have already made off with billions? In fact, is it time to claw it back? On the line with us is Julio Rivera, the editorial director of Reactionary Times, a columnist with Newsmax, American Thinker, and townhall.com, reactionarytimes.com. You can tweet him at, oh yeah, it's Julio. Julio, welcome back. Julio? I've got him on the phone. I'm not hearing him.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you now. I think maybe
okay,
your phone's muted.
No, I was going to say, listen, no, thank you for having me. But I agree with you on this issue. If you can find a direct line where there was a crime committed, and in terms of these opioid-producing pharmaceutical companies, the one thing is I'd like to know what their intent was as they marketed these drugs out.
It was to make money.
For doctors, for you. It was to make money. I understand that. But did they know? If they knew, if you can subpoena their records, their internal communications, whether or not these people were fully aware of how addictive these drugs were, and if they orchestrated that, absolutely. I agree with you 100%.
Yeah. They brought, Julio, you're right. And what happened, they rolled out OxyContin in 2000. They made $45 million in sales that year. By the end of that year, they were already getting reports from the field, from physicians, of people being addicted in as little as a week to their drug, which they were saying was, you know, less addictive than any other painkiller. By 2010, this company on this drug, just the OxyContin drug, was bringing into the company $3.1 billion. And that was 10 years after they had been warned by doctors that this was causing widespread addiction. So here, I guess the question then, you know, if we're in agreement, Julio, which is, you know, a rare thing, but it's nice to hear, is the party that you're friends with, the Republican Party, seems to be relatively fine with this. In fact, during the 2 years that the Republicans controlled Congress and Donald Trump was president, they actively blocked a series of attempts to hold Purdue Pharma accountable and to hold hearings on this. And they're big advocates of these bankruptcy laws. They say that if, and this has been going back to Reagan, basically, you know, Ralph Nader was the one who championed this stuff back in the 60s and 70s, which is what led to Lewis Powell's famous 1971 memo, literally identifying Ralph Nader. He's holding us accountable, corporate America, and we've got to do something about this. We need to build out a think tank infrastructure. We need to take control of the courts.
Yeah.
We need, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know the whole story.
Yeah.
And you know, why is it that the Republicans avoid this like the plague. These are not the only two companies.
We have to have corporate bankruptcy. Not everybody's out there committing a crime or intentionally defrauding the American people. Sometimes things don't go right in business, and then companies have to restructure.
I agree.
And they do have to file bankruptcy.
I agree.
You know, depending on how they file the bankruptcy, if this is a criminal matter where they can prove that sort of criminal intent, that's a conspiracy at that point. And then that's different. The damages will be handled completely different. There'll be restitution. People go to jail, and it'll never happen again in our country. But for a regular corporation that isn't intending to, lead directly to the cause of, 72,000 people dying of overdoses over the last few years because of this opioid crisis, if they're not doing anything criminally malicious, they should have the right for corporate bankruptcy. I don't understand if your argument against blanket corporate bankruptcy.
No. My argument is against white-collar executive immunity. I'm suggesting that, if the company goes bankrupt or not, there, A, should be a way to compensate the victims. And I think clawing back some of the, literally the Sackler family
there
took
should be.
Billions
there should be new
of dollars out of this
in
company.
The medical industry that makes these pharmaceutical companies more liable in these matters and not be able to be protected by bankruptcy. I don't have a problem with that type of legislation being written. No,
great.
Not at all.
I am glad to hear that. I'm so glad to hear that. So let's apply that logic to another industry, for example. We know that there's another industry in the United States that is causing at least 10,000 deaths a year and hundreds of thousands of cases of asthma. And that's the fossil fuel industry. They're promoting fossil fuels. I'm dead serious.
Tom.
We know this. Car exhaust is killing 10,000 people a year because
we have an EPA.
Mostly through lung cancer.
We have an EPA. People are getting fined and sanctioned all the time. There's restrictions on what we can do.
No.
From the perspective. Yes, there is.
You didn't let me finish my sentence, Julio. You don't know where I'm going with this.
Okay, all right, keep going.
So you've got this industry that is killing people, and they acknowledge it, we acknowledge it, the science acknowledges it, it's all out there, and there are alternatives to this, right? We could be building...
Yeah, but there's not alternatives that don't, in their initiation, require fossil fuels.
Well, let me finish my sentence.
There are alternatives out there, and they require fossil fuels.
I drive a plug-in hybrid. Maybe once a month... If Louise and I take a long enough trip, my car kicks over into gasoline mode. The rest of the time, I'm driving on electricity, and it's created by Bonneville Dam. I'm literally carbon free, that could be true of everybody in Portland. But these companies are not only promoting propaganda that this is silly and there's no problem there, and supporting the whole social media thing of blocking Teslas. But they're also lying to us about the consequences of their product. Shouldn't they be held as accountable as the Sackler family and Purdue Pharma?
No, it's absolutely completely different. It's a necessary thing that we need. The numbers don't justify what you're trying to say. You said that it leads to the death of 10,000 people. That's negligible, and I don't even know directly in what way do they contribute to
That's the estimate, that about 10,000 people a year are dying from specifically from cancers and lung diseases caused by inhaling the particulate matter that comes out of diesel and gasoline exhaust.
That's probably a very low number. From your body from pollen, you can develop cancer.
I don't think pollen will do it. But why would you defend the fossil fuel industry when they lie, and we know that they're lying, and they lobby aggressively to keep their product up there when they don't want, competing products out there? Why would you defend them when you're not willing to defend Purdue Pharma?
Fossil fuels are needed to create all those other industries. You're going to need all of
them. Opioids are needed to deal with pain.
Around.
But what we're talking about, I'm not. I think that OxyContin should be on the market.
Hang on just a second. 18-wheeler that runs off of electricity. Good luck.
Actually, it's entirely possible, and Tesla has already, made test vehicles to show that it's possible.
Not right this second.
If we agree,
I think we've got a little more than 12 years before the world ends, Tom.
Hang on just a second, Julio. If you and I are agreeing that OxyContin should be on the market, that there are people who are intractable pain and sometimes narcotics are the only thing that can deal with it, it should be on the market.
At the end of life, if you're dying, you're terminal, and you just need that humanitarian just relief of pain, yes.
Okay, so we're agreeing.
Giving it out like candy.
OxyContin should be on the market, but A company that lies about it and inappropriately promotes it should be held accountable, and including its executives, on a criminal basis. And we agree that fossil fuels are necessary. I'm not saying fossil fuels should be done away with tomorrow morning. You know, we make plastics out of them.
No,
we make medications out of them.
I think you're trying to apply the same argument to two things that are just completely different, Tom. So, no.
How are they different?
Because we need fossil fuels for basic survival. You know, we actually literally do. I mean, think about it. If right now it's 10 below zero where I'm at right now. Right. If we didn't have fossil fuels keeping my house warm, I'd probably be dead, Tom. So it's a completely different argument. And you need one to create the other.
But if you lived in Germany, Julio, where
we're going to need fossil fuels.
No, Julio, if you lived in Germany right now, where they did the 100,000 rooftops, which turned into tens of millions of rooftops of solar panels, they generated so much solar electricity now that they had to stop the program to rebuild their grid, a smart grid that could redistribute that electricity. Your home could be being heated by the electricity that the solar panels had captured.
Sure, it could be. A lot of things could be, but that's not practical. You can't snap your fingers and turn America into that overnight.
How did Germany do it?
Practical.
They did it through a big government program. They backstopped the banks.
Just like you told me last week when I brought up Venezuela, I don't care about Germany. We're talking about America and what we're dealing with here in
America. Right. So what's so stupid about America? Why? I think it's the fossil fuel industry owning politicians and preventing actual change.
Well, I mean, I don't think that the change that you're looking for is necessarily practical. I mean, I looked at some of these things in this green bill, and some of these lofty goals are just financially, like economically, we can't sustain that you know, we can't move that quickly.
Is it that we're too stupid?
We could do it progressively, don't get me wrong, but why are we going to spend ourselves into debt trying to figure out all these new things when we have an
because it'll put millions of people to work because it'll rebuild our economy
because of fossil fuels in part.
Because it'll put millions of people to work and it'll rebuild our economy. I don't see what's wrong with that.
Well, I'm not saying that we shouldn't explore more. We should explore more. But, I mean, I don't think it could be, you know, this is basically, we've gone off of the original argument here.
No, this is the argument. Is it time to hold corporate America accountable?
Well, listen, I'll tell you this much. Anybody who's a criminal in this country should be held accountable. So whether it's opioid, you know, producers, pharmaceutical companies sitting here and lying in the way that they're presenting their new drugs that they're creating and inventing, you know, if they lie to people and they know how dangerous it really is.
So if a fossil fuel company like Koch Industries or ExxonMobil lies to people about climate change, then you think they should go to jail?
There is no man-made climate change. The climate's been changing for billions of years.
There. Julio, thank you. Hang on just a second.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Rivera, ReactionaryTimes.com, his Twitter handle, oh yeah, it's Julio. Thanks, Julio.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Good talking with you. We'll be back. Welcome back. Sorry, I've got this cough. Jesse, and this is you know, probably from traveling to Minnesota where it's really cold. Jesse in Miami. Hey, Jesse, what's on your mind today? I'm going to take a pill here while we're talking.
Wow, it's tough to follow Julio. But
it always is.
Everything references, you know, making money. The original comment I want to make, you know, is capitalism. I mean, Republicans and Democrats really represent one party, how to make money. The end justifies the means. He's talking about being dead, being 10 below zero. He would have a lot of bear skins and buffalo skins on him to keep him warm. Forget the oil.
Right.
But we need a alternative to capitalist party of Republicans and Democrats. You think the New Deal could say, just go outright and say, hey, capitalism don't work. I mean, we could do better than it's bad, you know, it's bad, but it makes money. We could do good and make money. So you think they could come up with an alternative to it's bad and it makes money?
I think that Franklin Roosevelt very rarely talked about capitalism. Yeah. He did, however, talk about capitalists. And I think that the more that we can identify the billionaire malefactors, Franklin Roosevelt referred to as the economic imperialists or the economic royalists, the more we can identify them and make it about how they're trying to mess with our country and how they've seized control of our country, essentially, the better, I think.
Yeah, no, I would agree. But we have to make the argument that, you know, some these bad guys is using the cover of saying, well, we make money. And your guys who want to do good or be socialists, that don't make no money. Like you said, you know, talking about, can we go back and give up our lifestyle now? And, you know, it would be just too drastic. They use that argument. And how can we counter it by saying, hey, you know, we survived without oil for thousands of years.
Yeah.
I mean,
instead of doing it that way, Jesse, I would think the best way to counter it would be to say, you know, it was tough for the buggy whip manufacturers when we moved to cars. It was tough for the companies that made rotary dial phones when we moved to touch tone. And, you know, it was tough for the just fill in the blank. I mean, technology moves along. It was tough for the radio industry when television came along. That doesn't mean that you don't embrace change. It doesn't mean that you don't move forward into the future. It doesn't mean that you don't do a Green New Deal and build out a green infrastructure. You know, wind and solar, which are working all over the country right now. Texas and Iowa are getting more than 20% of their electricity now from wind and solar.
I agree, but the one thing that counters everything is everything has to be done at a profit, and that's what drives us crazy, because these things could be done just because we need to do them, but
Jesse, if you had started a small company in Miami there, you know, putting solar panels on people's houses, wouldn't you want to make a profit?
No, it's a profit defined between having something good to live by, between having something bad to
live
by.
Well, I mean,
by.
You know, most small companies don't actually show a profit. Mine never does, I can tell you. But you take the money out as pay. I mean, you would want to do that, wouldn't you, Jesse?
Price of extinction? No way.
No, I'm talking about putting up solar panels. Okay, we're out of time. Jesse, thanks for the call. Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you. 23 minutes past the hour. Sorry about my voice going weird last night. For the first time in a long time, for the first time in, I think, weeks, I ate some pizza with cheese on it. It's like, whenever I eat cheese, this happens. Oh, my. So, yeah, not a good thing. I need to go back to veganism. Okay, so we were talking about Purdue Pharma. Julio and I, and then we talked about basically holding corporations accountable. Is it time to hold corporations accountable? I'd like to take that a step farther because, you know, with Purdue Pharma, they were lobbying both, you know, lawmakers and doctors. Doctors to promote their products, lawmakers to protect their asses, right? I mean, this is what they were doing to keep from any kind of legislation that would stop them. This is what Purdue Pharma was doing. And then I went and pointed out that basically the fossil fuel industry is doing essentially the same thing. I mean, you know, they don't lobby doctors. Then they now own their own gas stations. Most of them are vertically integrated. But the point is that they're getting their product to market as effectively as they can. But mostly they are through advertising, through the court of public opinion, and of course through owning politicians. They are preventing us from moving into the 21st century. And they want to keep us stuck, not in the 20th century, but in the 19th century. That was the age of fossil fuels, right? You know, the coal-powered locomotives that connected the West Coast to the East Coast in the 1860s, you know, when they drove the Golden Spike, I think it was 1867, and all this kind of stuff. Well, it's not just them. Tim Wu, who is a law professor and a writer of op-eds for the New York Times from time to time, wrote a brilliant piece in today's New York Times. It's called The Oppression of the Supermajority. Not just the majority. We're not talking about 50% of Americans. We're talking about more than 60%, more than two-thirds of Americans. And he says the defining political fact of our time is not polarization. It's the thwarting of the largely unified public. Most Americans want the Sackler family and Purdue Pharma to be held accountable. Most Americans want the big banks to be held accountable. Most Americans want the internet companies that are fighting net neutrality to be held accountable. The private power companies that are making it hard for you to put solar on your roof to be held accountable. Well, here's what he says: about 75% of Americans favor higher taxes for the ultra wealthy. The idea of a federal law that would guarantee paid maternity leave attracts 67% support. That's more than two-thirds. 83% of Americans favor strong net neutrality rules for broadband. More than 60% want stronger privacy laws. 71% of Americans think we should be able to buy drugs imported from Canada. And 92% of Americans want Medicare to negotiate drug prices. The list goes on. And he said, what's making the public so angry isn't political divisiveness and the stuff that you hear from the pundits on television. Oh, we're so separated. Julio and Tom don't like each other. That's not what is making the public angry. What's making the public angry is that they're not getting what they want. We are not getting what we want. We did not hold the banks accountable in 2008. George W. Bush refused to hold the banks accountable and established a whole separate framework of bailing them out. And Obama continued in that direction, which is not so much a hit on Obama because at that point the die was cast, in my opinion. But it was like, oh, we're not going to hold anybody accountable. We would like some accountability. And why are they not being held accountable? He says, Tim Wu writes, it is primarily Congress that prevents popular laws from being passed. Why? Because of the combined influence of industry groups and donor interests. Period. We've been bought off.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
In other words, the root cause of all this political polarization is big money brought to you courtesy of the Supreme Court. This is getting interesting. Two congressmen just referred Jared Kushner to the Department of Justice for criminal investigation. Don Beyer and Ted Lieu for basically lying on his security clearance forms repeatedly. This is getting very interesting. Anyhow, let's pick up your phone calls here. Corey in Seattle. Hey, Corey, what's on your mind?
Hey, take off, Peter. Hey, so Julio's last point was that there is no man-made climate change, and
right.
So therefore ExxonMobil shouldn't be held accountable.
Right.
But didn't their own memos think that there was climate change?
Yeah, back in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, so...
Shell Oil is right now openly talking about climate change and talking about how they're trying to be one of the leading companies in the transition to clean energy.
Right, so my point is, wouldn't they be criminally liable for moving forward with the thing that they thought was going to harm people, even if it didn't turn out to be true? And, I mean, obviously, there's man-made climate change as far as I've been convinced.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, interesting question, Corey. Interesting question.
Anyways, I just thought of that as I was listening. But I wanted to ask you, so I know your father was a conservative. And since the 2016 election, I was as surprised as everybody else that Trump won. And I've been trying to listen to more conservatives just, so I don't feel like I'm in my own bubble. I'm curious, are there any conservatives that you listen to that your hair doesn't completely set on fire immediately? And I wanted to ask you about steelmanning conservatives when you talk to them rather than strawmanning conservatives.
Say that again about what manning them?
Oh, steelmanning. This is one thing that I actually picked up from listening to some conservatives. They were what they called it steelmanning. So rather than taking the other side's weakest argument and tacking the crap out of it, strawmanning, they
Well, strawmanning is when somebody presents a phony argument.
Well, sure.
Ocasio-Cortez wants Hawaii to build a railroad to California. I mean, that literally has been said by a number of Republicans now. And it's not only not part of the Green New Deal, but it's a straw man.
Okay. Well, what I was talking about is steelmanning. So you take what you consider the other side's best argument, right, and you go from there, and you put it in their perspective. And I think that's a really, really good way to start a conversation. I heard a conversation between, I think it was maybe Dave Rubin and Sam Harris or something like that. But that's how they started a conversation. I thought that was really interesting, and I was curious if you could try it out sometime.
Okay, give me an example of how I could have done that in the talk I just had, because I'm still not clear.
I'm not trying to take you to task for that.
No, I get it. You're not trying to take me to task at all. But if I can learn something from this, I'm all in favor of it.
I actually only picked up or only started listening in the middle of that last interview, so I didn't hear much of it. But yeah,
okay. Great, Corey. Thank you. You asked conservatives that I listen to. It's I used to drive to work, and actually before we moved to D.C. So the last time I lived in Portland, when we lived in Portland, so that was 10 years ago. Or thereabouts. Louise and I used to drive to KPOJ, where we did our show from. And on the way there and on the way home, we would listen sometimes to right-wing talk radio. And the two hosts that I think are actually really good talk show hosts, even though their points make me want to scream and climb the walls from time to time, are Rush Limbaugh and Michael Savage. Limbaugh, for the way that he spins the news, and Michael Savage is just, I think he's a talk radio genius, the way that because he tells stories, he puts things in a story context. The other person that I really like to listen to, because I think he's, frankly, a better talk show host than I am, he's absolutely brilliant, is Joe Madison. Joe is on the air way before I am. He's on Sirius XM from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m., I think. And so it's hard for me to catch his show these days. But, those are the people that I believe are, really genuine talents in this industry. If you want to examine style and stuff like that. Corey, I need to move along. Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Can I share who I've been listening to real quick?
Say what?
Can I share who I've been listening
sure.
to real quick? I've listened to a little bit of Ben Shapiro. He set my hair on fire, but
yeah.
I know that a lot of people are listening to him, and it really makes me feel like I'm, when I listen to him and I talk to a Republican, I hear a lot of those points, and then I'm able to talk to him a little better.
Yeah, yeah. He used to come on this program and debate me, but he hasn't done it in years now. So.
Oh, I was gonna. Yeah, that'd be awesome if you did that one.
Yeah,
time.
He's not willing to do it anymore.
Dave Rubin is also a pretty decent one. And to your listeners, y'all should pick up the Joe Rogan podcast. If you have a 3 hours long form podcast, really good, interesting discussion.
Okay.
Thanks for your time, Tom.
Corey, thanks a lot.
Great
Bye.
Program.
Jesse in Greensboro, North Carolina. Hey, Jesse, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Pleasure to call the show as always. Love
Thank
the
you.
Show. Hey, I kind of came in kind of like the last mid to tail end part of Julio's argument.
Yeah.
Now, here's what I want to address, and I'm going to go ahead and say this. Julio seems like he might be amenable to actual good scientific common sense when you present it in a way the way he can get it. But I think his biggest problem is that he's still trying to toe the party line of conservatives. And from my little small debates I've had with conservatives about climate change, they'll say, well, the climate's been changing for billions of years. I'm like, yeah, true, but here's the thing, though. It hasn't changed in such a rapid rate until we started using fossil fuel.
Correct.
One guy tried to tell me, well, I think solar cells are expensive. I said, okay, I'll tell you what. The path to hell is paved with your own fear of something being expensive. I said, let me break something to you, son. I was like, look, let me break something to you real quick. You're talking to a former mechanical engineer student who went to university, who did take two physics classes. Who does have an idea about nuclear technology? Nuclear technology is not inherently dangerous unless you split the atom, creating fission, making a nuclear bomb. Fusion is when you put the atom together and you can produce power. The sun itself is a naturally reoccurring fusion reactor. So I'm like, all right, people, you guys want to hear common sense, just look, read the science book and realize that a lot of what the science does contradicts your little scary opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's time for us all to start using nuclear fusion power from that nuclear fusion reactor 93 million miles away that, provides, a couple of square miles. I forget how many. The number was released a while ago in the Mojave Desert. If it was turned into a giant solar farm, could power all the power needs of Southern California. We have so much solar potential in the United States, particularly south of the Mason-Dixon line, but really all over the country. country. I mean, Germany has done this, and they're cloudier than Michigan, which is, you know, one of the cloudiest states in the United States because of the lake effect off Lake Michigan. So spot on, Jesse. You know, well said. Thank you very much. Georgia in Fort Bragg, California. Hey, Georgia, thanks for listening to 107.7. What's up?
I just wanted to ask if Suboxone was made by Purdue. I think that the oxycodone problem is precipitated to give them a place to market their antiaddiction.
So Suboxone, if I'm pronouncing that right, is the drug that is given to people to stop overdoses, or is that the drug that you use to wean people off?
That's something else. This is a treatment for addiction, pill.
So this stops withdrawal symptoms and things like that, or makes it...
It makes
people sick
makes
when they
the
take narcotics.
Makes the brain more satisfied without the OxyContin.
Right, okay. I don't know if that's made by Purdue or not. I have no idea.
It just seems they've developed a market for addiction.
Yeah. I think this was just good old-fashioned greed. They had a new narcotic. It was a very, very effective painkiller. But it was very effective because it was very close to heroin. I mean, heroin is the most effective of all the painkillers. Now you've got fentanyl, you know, it's totally synthetic, but of the naturally derived opioids.
And that's what Suboxone is for, to help with withdrawal from those drugs.
Right, to get people out of it. I just don't know, Georgia, if it's made by Purdue or not. And, you know, it's a good question.
You see where I'm going.
I see exactly where you're going. And
okay.
I just don't know the answer to the question, so I'm not, you know, I can't accuse the company
all right.
of it.
I'll look into it myself then. Thank you.
Good plan. Thank you, Georgia. Jim in Poway, California.
Poway, you got it.
Hey, Jim, I'm sorry. I missed my break cue. Senator Jeff Merkley is going to be with us in a few minutes. I'm going to put you on hold, and we'll come back to your call in a little bit, or perhaps in the next hour. We do not have a guest in the next hour, so we can pick that up fairly quickly, Jim, so stick around. We'll be back. It's 43 and a half minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman program. Stick around. We'll be right back. Senator Jeff Merkley has a fascinating announcement to make.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
So stick around. It's the Tom Hartman program where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? And we dare to say, no, not a chance. And welcome back. And by the way, Sean looked it up. Purdue Pharma does not make Suboxone. Johnny in Lamarck, Texas. Hey, Johnny, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
Hi, Tom. You've had a busy day today.
Yeah.
Listen, I've got a simple answer for Julio Rivera. Is that his last name, Rivera?
Yeah.
Your guest earlier?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, the Republicans, they love to do the reverse game on us all the time. He says it's not practical for solar energy in regards to the way Germany or anybody does it, for that matter. And my simple answer to him is solar is practical exactly because hydraulic fracturing to extract natural gas and sticky tar, so-called oil, isn't practical because of the earthquakes and the contamination for aquifers is always there, poisoning soil. And what's not practical is safe storage of radioactive nuclear power plant waste. These things are not practical.
And coal waste is contaminating groundwater.
Yeah, the groundwater, that's what I just said, aquifers.
No, I'm talking about the coal waste also. You've got this coal ash from these coal-fired power plants, and, it's contaminating.
Right. I forgot that, too. That's right.
Literally, 9 out of 10 of them are contaminating the groundwater, the communities in which these coal-fired power plants exist.
Yeah, I wish I could afford to get rid of this magic check so we could have a decent conversation.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Johnny. Johnny, I gotta move along. But thanks for the call. You're absolutely right. Germany is the example. Morris in Long Beach, California, listening on KPFK. Hey, Morris, what's up?
Hey, Professor, I could have swore you were talking about the book Dreamland.
Yeah.
But anyway, I wanted to ask Mr. Cory Booker, who got funded or financed by Big Pharma, if he thought the Sackler family should go to jail like El Chapo has gone to jail, or is there a difference between the two, in his opinion. But this is a serious, serious problem, this drug thing. And you know the biggest problem we got, Professor, is this. You know, we should be called the East India Company, a.k.a. USA, because we're treated more like subjects than we are citizens. And we're asked to be more of a consumer than we are people that manufacture stuff. And Julio, don't get mad at him. That brother just trying to survive, so he's a mouthpiece for blank.
Yeah.
But thanks for taking my call.
No, I don't get mad at Julio, and I think, Morris, I think I can tell, you know, not just with Julio, but with a lot of our conservative guests, you know, when they're speaking from conviction and when they're not. Although, you know, one of the principal rules of NLP, which I've always tried to follow, you know, since I learned this in my 30s, or actually mid-20s, was take people at face value. You know, believe what people say. Don't try to read meaning into what they say, because you may well be wrong. And if it's important, and you're not sure if there's hidden meaning, ask them. You know, do you mean to say this? Or are you just saying that? And so, you know, I'm just taking him at his word, and you know, apparently he thinks, and that's why I brought up, rather than bringing up climate change, I brought up the 10,000 annual cancer, by and large, cancer and lung disease deaths that are just the result of just auto exhaust. I mean, just that we know from that. If we just went to electric cars, we'd save 10,000 people a year, far more than are killed by illegal aliens in Donald Trump's world, right? I mean, you know, you want a villain? There it is. And it's a fixable problem. So anyhow, we'll be back. Senator Jeff Merkley is going to be with us in just a moment. It's coming up on 12 minutes before the hour. And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program, the true people's media. On the line with us is my senator, one of my two senators, Senator Jeff Merkley, one of the really genuinely great guys in the U.S. Senate, one of the true progressives, a genuine progressive hero, a guy that I think would make a great president. And Senator Merkley, welcome back to the program.
Oh, thanks so much, Tom. Good to be with you.
And I understand that you made a decision here about whether to run for president. And let me just hand it to you. I saw your video this morning, and if you could recap the points you made in it was so brilliant. I was going to play it on the air if we couldn't get you live, because it's here. Let me hand it to you.
Well, thanks. And I've been fully exploring the 2020 primary, pondering how can I best use these few years that I have on the planet to make the world a better place. Is it running for re-election to the Senate and fighting to elect others? Is it running for president myself? And I came to a decision that, in fact, I am not going to run for the presidency. I am going to run for re-election. It just comes down to this. We have these three really big crises. We have a democracy crisis with gerrymandering and voter suppression and dark money. We have a climate crisis with carbon pollution driving climate chaos. And we have a crisis in terms of investing in the foundations for thriving families, healthcare, housing, education, living wage jobs. And we can have the best president in the world, combine FDR and JFK and whoever else your heroes are, and still get nothing done if we don't turn the Senate into a place that can actually function as a legislative body. And so I feel that's where my ability to be on the battlefield in a positive, productive way is to help with that battle in the Senate.
Well, I applaud you. And if there's ever anything that we can do, with this program to help you in that work, give us a shout. The door is literally always open here for you. What are the things that, in your opinion, forgive my voice here, it's going out. What are the things, in your opinion, that are before the Senate, that are before you, that should be our highest priorities right now? You just identified three broad areas, but is there specific legislation in any of those areas that people should be jumping on board about? Are there any calls to action, things that you would like people to call their senators? The congressional switchboard is 202-225-3121 to promote. I know you've been doing a lot of work and been down to the southern border, and you've been down to some of these child detention centers, for example. You have been a hero in highlighting that issue. And now we're seeing just the incredible damage that's being done to these children. Two of them have died now at the hands of the Bush or the Trump administration. But what's your list?
Yes. So I really encourage people to help the House right now get key bills passed, even though at this moment the Senate will be a graveyard, I'm sorry to say, because Mitch McConnell is not interested in taking on the issues of housing or health care or education or infrastructure, even for that matter, or living wage jobs. He's not interested in putting things on the floor that will address gerrymandering or voter suppression or dark money, all of which have to be addressed. He's certainly not interested in taking on climate through the very – we have a huge number of tools that we can deploy. So the House is going to be the place I encourage people to really push their House members. We need to lay out an agenda there that will set the foundation for the 2020 battles to come. And I do, and you raise this issue of our treatment of migrant families, and so let me pivot that to that for a moment. I'm going to be going back down to the border to visit another so-called temporary child prison in Homestead. It's a prison that's being expanded. I pushed for Tornillo to be shut down. It was shut down. I'm going to go down to across the border into some of the encampments where we're shoving people back across the border. It comes down to this. We are treating those fleeing persecution around the world as criminals. And we should never treat people in that fashion.
These are refugees, are they not?
What's that?
These are refugees, are they not?
They're refugees. They're refugees. They're refugees from war, from economic disasters, from natural disasters, from religious oppression. They're refugees, and we are a nation of immigrants. We should understand and want those refugees to be treated as we would have wanted our ancestors to be treated, with respect and decency as they await an asylum hearing. And the children, I mean, we had in December 15,000 children in Trump's child prison system across the country. And he's had these internment camps, and he wants to expand them. We're not even doing basic health care when migrants come across the border, which is why those two children died. I went down with the Hispanic caucus to look into that. Turns out when the administration says they're doing wellness checks, that's not a wellness check. What they're doing is asking a room full of refugees if anyone needs assistance. That's what they call a wellness check. They don't take the temperature, ask the children when they last ate, ask if they're feeling ill, or any just the basics of a true wellness check. And thus, quite frankly, here's the thing: when you ask a room full of refugees if anybody needs help, nobody speaks up. Because they're afraid of being separated from their family members, they're afraid of being singled out, that's another piece of the puzzle where just the Trump team is getting completely wrong. But they are treating these refugees as political pawns, and they're willing to inflict trauma on children as part of a political strategy, and that is just an evil, evil thing.
Yeah. Well, and it's not just a political strategy. I mean, you know, John Kelly came right out and said, basically, I'm not even paraphrasing, I'm rephrasing, but basically he said, if we can inflict enough pain on parents and their children, it will cause other parents with children to say to themselves, I'm not willing to go there and endure that pain. I'm not willing to take that chance. And that seems to me like it's so contrary to traditional American values that it's shocking. And yet the Republican Party has wholly embraced it.
No, absolutely. And he said that in March 2017 when the administration was new and he was still a Homeland Security Director. Now we have a Homeland Security Director who says there's no deterrence plan. There's no child separation policy. She just absolutely lies to the American people and lies to Congress. Say, if I can, Tom, I wanted to pivot, if I can, to
sure.
talk a little bit about the Green New Deal.
Yeah, go for it. You got this last minute is yours.
Here is the heart of it. We have a massive carbon pollution problem driving climate change at an accelerating pace. It's hurting us everywhere. The Green New Deal says, one, recognize we have a big problem. Two, that we have to go fiercely and boldly into addressing it. And three, don't leave behind. And, of course, we're creating millions of jobs taking on this challenge. Don't leave our frontline communities or our rural communities behind. That's the essence of it. That should make sense to everyone, and we've got to do it.
Yeah. I think, you know, more people, I used to live in Germany and you know, keep, and I get back there typically once a year. And, you know, they have solarized that country. I mean, it's just amazing. And it's, and I grew up in Michigan, which is one of the cloudiest states in the United States. And Germany is the cloudiest country in Europe. And it's about the same latitude as Michigan. And they still, they have all this solar power. So it can be done, Senator.
Absolutely. It can be done, and it must be done.
Yeah. Amen. Senator Jeff Merkley, his website, Merkley, MERKLEY.senate.gov. If you don't know him, you don't know about the work he's doing, please check it out. You can tweet him at Sen, as in Senator Jeff Merkley. Senator, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Great talking with you. We'll be back. We're going to pick up, you know, the topics that we've been talking about, and we're also going to get into the flu.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.